Welcome to the Wackle Gather podcast. My name is Judy Mitchum. Wackle is an organization for top female leaders in marketing, media, and communications. In this podcast series, I will be talking to some top female leaders, women who are also known to be change makers. This podcast is being released in advance of the Wackle Gather event on the 23rd of May. It is sponsored by Whaler, the most creative influencer marketing company. My guest today is Camilla Harrison, Chief Executive of creative agency Anomaly, an agency that intriguingly likes to deviate from the norm. Before she took the reins at Anomaly, Camilla worked in top agencies like MNC Saatchi, Leo Burnett, and Wieden Kennedy. She's one of the industry's most vibrant and energetic leaders, and she describes herself as full-on, highly competitive, and brave. Those that know her appreciate her refreshing frankness and her tremendous sense of fun. And on that note, a very warm welcome to Camilla.
Hi, Judy.
Lovely to have you here. And I hate to drag you away from your copy of Heat magazine, which you have been reading avidly as we prepare for this podcast.
It's extremely exciting to have it. It's perched. It's perched in my eye line trying to distract me. So, yeah, it's a joy. I can't not read it.
Well, welcome. And I'd like to start just with asking you about your early stages of your career. And a lot of people think that these top female leaders just fall out of education into top jobs. And I think you had quite an interesting start in that you put an ad in PR Week advertising yourself as a Girl Friday. Can you tell us?
Yes, I did. I did. I did the opposite of fall into a top job. I'd done work experience at my cousin's PR agency, and it was in, oh God, it was like in the 80s. I mean, that's how old. And it went bust, actually, but no one did any work at all. And I did work experience in this PR agency. And all I had to do, given I was doing art A-level, this was very easy, was cut out articles and put them in a scrapbook. And everyone in the PR agency said, oh my God, you're like really talented at PR. So I was like, this is brilliant. So I told my parents that I would do PR because I had a gift and I wouldn't go to university. So my dad said, are you sure? And he was very relieved that I didn't go to university. And I was like, this is great. And then it occurred to me I had no idea how to find a job in PR, and obviously my cousin's company had gone bust. So I put an ad. PR Week was like, you know, the industry, well, still is, the industry magazine, and it had classified ads at the back where people sold photocopiers and branded baseball caps and golf balls and things like that. And I put an ad for myself in the classified, underneath the photocopier, actually, I was, with a PO box number, and I got lots of responses. And I made another poor decision because I went for some quite good interviews, but I chose a really random company. Which also doesn't exist anymore. There's a theme. Good, this is all about change. wrong kind of change. There's a theme. So I worked in a very small PR agency. There were three of us. It was called Tony Whitfield Publicity, and it consisted of Tony Whitfield, a girl called Alison, and me.
And weren't you doing prestigious PR for things like catering equipment?
I was catering equipment. We worked with Quest Refrigeration, who actually pioneered the glass fronted fridge that would go behind bars, and Moffitt stainless steel catering equipment. And given that my earlier work experience had basically been Tiffany Jeweller and Aston Martin, it was a bit of a fall. From there.
Well, before we get too carried away talking about catering equipment and refrigeration.
Tempting as it is, yes.
You've now soared somehow to the lofty heights of Chief Exec of Anomaly. And can you just tell us a little about what does the Chief Exec of a creative agency, what does that involve and what do you do? Just share that with our listeners.
Oh, wow. That's like a really hard question to answer. Well, I think there's theory and like any good job, any job, there's what you do in reality and what you do in theory. So in theory, you provide the vision for the business, you lead everyone, you inspire everyone, you instill confidence all around you. And obviously you run the business, you run the finances, the hiring, ultimately accountable for everyone. In reality, it's probably more in between sort of, there's quite a lot of herding cats situation right. going on. It's very exciting. It changes every day. Like most jobs, you want it to be much more proactive and you end up being far too reactive.
Yeah.
And you ask yourself at the end of every day, what did I achieve today? And as I open my screw top bottle of wine, I usually think not enough. So it's sort of kind of everything, but the reality is I spend a lot of time where the fires are, putting out fires. That's the reality of a lot of jobs, isn't
so
it?
I went on Glassdoor, which is a reputable website where people post things to find out about Anomaly, and the post at the top said smart people work here but you need to dodge the curveballs. Was quite entertaining.
That's amazing good research.
So now the theme of Wackel Gather this year is change makers, and I just wanted to talk a little bit about your relationship with change. And as a child, your parents were in the army, so change was a constant for you.
Yes, yeah, actually, growing up, I was incredibly lucky. I had a very, very happy childhood, and actually lots of consistency in my parents being together and the way that I was brought up. But obviously growing up in a military background means you move every 18 months and you never know where you're going to move to, which I think is probably, more of a curveball for my parents than it was for me. So that results in moving schools a lot, having to make friends a lot, finding yourself living next to new people all the time. And then inevitably, when you really start your education in earnest, going to boarding school. So I went pretty young. I think I was 7 or 8 when I went to boarding school. But I absolutely loved it. It was terrific. But yeah, it's a different relationship. You get consistency in different places. I would get a letter from my mum and dad at school saying, we've moved, here's the new address. And I would go, wow. And then at half term or the holidays, I would be picked up by my dad and driven to a new house. And
did you get to move to anywhere like, the South Pacific or the Barbados? Or was it always
East Grinstead? I tell you. It was pretty much East Grinstead. We did a number of years in Northern Ireland, went to Northern Ireland a few times, a bit in Germany. And then, a few areas in the home counties, basically. So nothing that glamorous.
So we're working in this rapidly changing world, and it's interesting because you say that you had to get used to change a lot as a child, but I think you'd be the first to admit that change isn't always easy. You shared this with me before, and it's actually quite a challenge to embrace change in the working environment.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of fascinated by the theme this year. And I'm very much looking forward to coming and learning how the hell to do it, really. But I think the whole notion of change for all of us, I think there is a thing in our industry. A lot of us thrive because we get things under control and we learn how to control the things around us as much as possible. And of course, if you're the one driving change, to some extent, it's in your control. So you can go, oh, I really want to implement this change. I want to do this restructure. Or I want to do this. I want to, So that is really about executing a plan.
Yeah.
I think that change is interesting. Real change is when it happens to you, because that's the change that you don't know is coming. It's the change you didn't ask for. And that's the adjusting and adapting and finding ways to sort of keep going when change is happening to you and around you. And I think that is a way harder skill. And there are many people much better at it than me.
I think you've shared with me before that you have a love-hate relationship with change. Would you like to expand on that?
I mean, I'm a huge optimist, and I look at any situation, I always think it's going to be great, it's going to be fine. And in the workplace, particularly when it's sort of rational change, I find it really exciting, really exciting. And I think, you know, blah, blah, everyone will talk about it loads. There's never been a time of more change, all this stuff. And a combination of my optimism and kind of leaning into that is fun, and it means things don't get boring and all that stuff. Personally, as that same control freak, I think that when the carpet is pulled away from under your feet and there are things that you think are stable and solid that make you okay with all the other change, and then those things are disrupted, that's incredibly, it's probably the hardest thing.
Yes.
And those sorts of things can be anything from someone close to you being ill. It could be a relationship that you're in changing, but you didn't know it was going to change. It could be, I was sharing with some of my friends even last year, I was renting my property and I just, like, on a Wednesday night got an email from the woman who owned the property saying, yeah, I've been renting it for ages. I need the house back. Yeah. I'm moving back in. And suddenly, you know, bottom of Maslow's hierarchy, my foundations, the place I lived, I just hadn't been thinking that it, I'd sort of forgotten I rented it, in honesty, which financially is a bad thing. But anyway,
yes.
suddenly it was like, that's the place I live. And it threw me into total turmoil for about 48 hours. But it's amazing how quickly, even within 24 hours, you then take control of the situation. You're on agents' websites. I'm like, yep, I'm going to buy a house. I'm going to make it happen really quickly. And then you're okay again. But when the bullet hits, it's, I think the bigger the control freak and the more you're in charge of change, the less you like it being done to you.
Yeah, yeah. And so how do you manage to maintain that optimism that you have? Because you do have such a joie de vivre and you are always such a radiant personality.
Are
you quite frank about the fact that you're having to deal with difficult things? Or do you manage it like a swan who's sort of paddling furiously to keep the wheels going round?
No, I paddle on the surf. I'm like a, what's the opposite to a swan? I don't know. Someone wheeling their arms and splashing
hamster.
A lot. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like something that doesn't swim, trying to swim. I think I'm probably naturally reasonably optimistic.
Yeah.
I think I was brought up to see a way through, to assume that there's a way through everything. And actually, the thing that I think has really helped me personally is having sort of knowing it's... I think I sort of know it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And the only reason I know it's going to be okay is because things have... And I make it sound like I've had this awful life, and I really haven't. But things like, you know, I have had... Definitely, I've had very... You know, I went through a divorce. I went through, but, you know... got divorced, yeah. I got married and I got divorced. And I do remember when I sort of realised that this relationship was going to end in divorce, just sitting, looking around me in this house and looking at, like, the stuff everywhere. And I'd been with my husband, I hadn't been married to him for 13 years, but we'd been together for 13 years. And I remember looking around going, oh my God, our lives are so interconnected. I just don't know. I don't even know how I'm going to... It just felt overwhelming, the idea of being able to extract my life, and just felt almost impossible.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you just do it.
Yeah.
And then you look back and you go, well, that was all right.
And,
actually
control.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
And there's a really good ad, which is great, isn't it? It was an ad, but I can't remember if it was for Adidas or Nike. I think it was Nike. And so that's really bad, isn't it? Attribution. But it's of a runner and it's a street and it says to the lamppost, to the dump truck, to the car or whatever. And it's just that notion of you can always just get to the next bit. And then you can always just get to that little next bit.
Yeah.
And if you run and you feel knackered, and you can always just squeeze out that extra 15 meters to go to that lamppost. And I think that's how I sort of stay optimistic. I just go, oh, I can definitely get to that bit. And then I'm going to see that mate and we're going to laugh down. About it. And then I'm going to be back in the difficult bit again. But guess what? Then I'm going to go and, I don't know, read Heat magazine, have a blow dry, and that's going to cheer me up. And then, and you know, you just... You
break it down into little chunks. Yeah, I think that's a really good philosophy. And also what you said about taking control, you know, when you first have to deal with change, it's quite stressful, but you like to take control and then you are on the front foot.
I've been really amazed. One of the really horrific parts of being, horrible parts of being a CEO is that from time to time you have to have really difficult conversations with people about their employment, and whether that is around, you know, their performance, or whether that is ultimately around things like when you restructure and you have to make people redundant. And I find the process of that actually quite inspiring, because it is the most extraordinary thing that you can have a conversation with someone. And basically you do, and it's the worst feeling I know at work, where you take away control from that person in a moment and they get the worst news that they can possibly get, and you watch it sink in and you watch them lose, you know, you see the control be taken away from them. But what is unbelievable is that within a day, 2 days, you see that person kind of configuring, taking control of that situation and adapting and pivoting to a new future and starting to track into a new future, and, you know, probably getting quite tough and hard with you, whatever it is, but they sort of, they immediately start equipping themselves for a different future, and it takes a day.
And it's sometimes incredible. It can be quite liberating for them as well, once they've got over that initial shock.
I just think it just shows what people can,
the human spirit.
Yeah, it's phenomenal that you can be feeling attacked and totally out of control and like you don't know where your life is going, and within hours and days you see people with energy for a new destination. You just go, that is phenomenal.
So Camilla, you've been a WACL president in the past, so you're deeply connected with WACL, and in your tenure as WACL president you drove quite positive change in terms of raising awareness of mental health. Mm-hmm. Can you just share with our listeners a little bit about what you did and how you did that?
Oh, sure. Well, first, I'd like to say there are many people in WACL and many people beyond WACL who know a hell of a lot more about mental health than I do, and who do a hell of a lot more than I do. So let's just put that context out there. But I think when I selected Mind as my charity, and I just wanted at the time for the club to be a more open and accepting place around the issue of people being able to talk about how they are, see mental health differently, I guess, just the same as physical health. And I think people probably find it quite hard to accept from me, because I am quite positive and optimistic, but probably some of that is a reaction to the fact that I do have you know, my brother, for example, struggles with a condition that makes life extremely hard for him. And I feel very fortunate that I don't, but I see firsthand the pain and difficulty that that creates, and I feel firsthand the pain of that and the impact of that on family and friends. And it's absolutely catastrophic at times and everywhere. So yeah, I felt I'm not sure I had a particular mission in terms of what I would achieve, but I just think, clearly you can tell I love talking, but I do think that just being open and transparent and talking is a massive start, and something that we don't do enough. So that was very much what I tried to do.
And it was fairly significant that you did this, because a lot of people try to continue swan-like, as we mentioned, and pretend everything's fine because they think that's the professional way of behaving in work. But what you encourage people to do was open up, which is significant.
I think exactly that. If they want to, you know, not everyone wants to, but I think not being afraid to ask and see how people are, and not being afraid to give an honest answer. And I think sort of shoehorning that all the way back into thinking about the workplace, you know, just the more honesty you can engender, whether it's with your teams, whether it's with clients, whether it's with agencies, whoever it is, the more you can cut through the nonsense and the marketing crap and the pretense that everyone's, you know, swan-like and absolutely hashtag living their best life and all that stuff. You know, we all know that's not true. And equally, when we all talk in riddles, I find it incredibly annoying. You know, the quicker you can just get to a real conversation, particularly when there's a problem at hand, and the way to get change to happen or to deal with change is not to pretend it isn't happening, and it's not to sort of obfuscate or circle around it. It's just to call it and deal with it. So I think practicing honesty is probably, I know that sounds weird because you might not think you're being dishonest, but practicing being really honest is pretty good. Like when you do it, usually you're met with honesty and you go, wow, that would have taken 3 weeks to have that conversation.
And you're refreshingly honest in the way you talk about these things. So I think that's, you know, really helpful for our listeners. Of course, as WACL president, you will have been to GABA probably more than once. And just tell us, why do you think WACL GABA is such a good event, and why should people go?
Oh, God, it's awesome. It was my first encounter back when it was called the Forum decades ago. I mean, literally that long ago. And I went and I just thought, this is awesome. It's a brilliant day. It's a brilliant day. And it's a brilliant day in the day, but it's a brilliant day after the day because stuff sticks with you. I can still remember bits of advice, pearls of wisdom and stuff from my first encounter at a version of this day.
There
was nothing like even what it is now, which is such a phenomenal day. And I still remember because it, for me, it was the first time, going back to that honesty point, actually, it was the first time I got to see all these awesome women as people who were a bit like me that I could relate to, rather than these amazing people who back then, let's be honest, were wearing shoulder pads.
I know exactly what you mean.
That you were like, they're amazing, but they're not like me. And then suddenly this thing happens where you go, wow, people are far more like you than you think.
Yeah, they're human.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because the WACL senior leaders open up and talk about their route up the ladder.
And, you know, my issues and my verbal diarrhea and all the things that you can manage it as you get older, but it doesn't change. You don't change who you are. So I just sort of think that actually you forget. You see someone who's, I don't know, CEO of a FTSE 100 company or whatever it is, and you go, oh my God, it's like a revelation. They're a bit like me. I'm a bit like them. And that's an amazing, inspiring thing. And then you hear them differently, and people in the context of GABA are so unbelievably honest and generous with things that could be intimate, personal things that it takes a great deal of bravery to share.
Yes.
And they do it because there's something very magical about GABA, and it's a safe space, and it's just such a brilliant example to set to do that, I think.
Yes, and it's coming on the 23rd of May, just to give WACL GABA a plug. And my final question, Camilla, before I leave you to go back to Heat magazine, which was clearly quite engrossing, is if you had a hot tip for your younger self or for an aspiring female leader at the beginning of their career, what would it be? What would you encourage them to be?
Okay, I'm going to say something controversial, not controversial, but probably not what people say. So pretty much everyone will say, I should have just been myself. I should have been myself. I should have trusted myself, known myself, be myself. And it's really like, there's a lot of that that's true, be yourself.
Yeah.
But if I look back at myself and someone had said, be yourself, that would have been absolutely no help to me at all. Because I really, I think it's some of the stuff that I've talked about today that like helps you kind of figure out and become self-aware about who you really are.
Yes.
And I think it's very hard to be yourself when you're still figuring out what that is.
Yeah.
And P.S., I'm not there yet.
Yes.
I've just learned to be a bit more unfiltered, and I've learned what I shouldn't say and roughly where to draw the line, because it'll get you in trouble. But I've learned how to edit for the situation that I'm in. But we're all multidimensional people, and you definitely shouldn't be someone else. But I think don't sweat over analysing like who you are and working out how to channel that brand or whatever it is. I would have found that unbelievably unhelpful. And to be honest, when I think like that, I get myself in a pickle now. So that's what not to do. So I would say try not to think too much about who you are at all.
Yes, figure
and
out.
Just try and be in the moment, be really present, really listen to people, get all the advice you can, be as honest as you can. Be brave, don't be afraid to ask, all that good stuff. But you'll figure it out. That's what I would just give myself the advice to say, don't sweat it. You're going to figure it out. Just trust the moment.
What a great final piece of advice, and how optimistic as ever Camilla has been. I would like to say a very, very big thank you to Camilla, CEO of Anomaly, to Mediacom, who have very kindly organised all the technical support we need to make these Wackle Gather podcasts happen. And the final thing to say is Wackle Gather is on the 23rd of May 2019. And if you go to the Wackle website, you will be able to get your tickets there. Thank you.